This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Monday, April 19th. I'm Julia Caulfield. In today's headlines, Colorado provides rapid, free, at-home COVID testing. Norwood School District welcomes new superintendent. New superhero steps in to fight climate change. And a mountain weather forecast. But first, longtime San Miguel County resident Lori Spohr passed away surrounded by family on Sunday afternoon. She was 90 years old. Spohr moved from Telluride to Norwood when she was 15 years old. She married her beloved husband, Peter Bud Spohr, who passed away last year after 72 years of marriage. Crippen Funeral Homes will attend to services. Spohr is survived by her sister, Oleta, her children, John, Jerry, Joe, and Linda, and many grandchildren. We know the five commitments. By this point in the pandemic, we can probably recite them in our sleep. Most of them are simple things each person can make a choice to do. Wear a mask, wash hands, limit group size, maintain physical distance, stay home if you're sick. But one piece of those commitments is a bit harder. Get tested. San Miguel County has a number of free ways to get tested, but they often require an appointment, time out of your day. Now, San Miguel County and the state of Colorado are providing free at-home rapid COVID test kits. The program is intended for Colorado employees who are required to interact with the public as part of their job, like teachers, restaurant workers, retail or hotel employees, and truck drivers. Individual employees are eligible to sign up for the rapid test kit through the state. Once they receive the test kit, employees will log into a telehealth portal to receive guided instructions from a healthcare provider to administer the test. Telehealth services are available in English and Spanish. According to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, test results should take approximately 20 minutes. San Miguel County also has a number of bulk test kits available for businesses to test a full staff. Businesses who would like to enroll in the program for their staff can contact publichealth@sanmiguelcountyco.gov. Individuals who would like to participate can enroll through the CDPHE website at covid19.colorado.gov/testing. The Norwood School District recently hired a new superintendent. Todd Bittner is officially stepping into the role this summer. He is currently serving as the high school principal at Pinnacle Charter School in Federal Heights, outside of Denver. KOTO News spoke with Bittner about where he hopes to see the Norwood School District go in the future and what he's looking forward to as he makes the move to the Western Slope. Hey, Todd, thanks for taking a few minutes to chat with me today.
It's my pleasure, and I look forward to starting a new career and new life in the San Miguel County area.
You will be starting your role as superintendent in the coming months, but can you share a little bit of information on who you are and where you're coming from?
My background comes from being kid first and kid focused. And what I mean by that is I've had a tremendous experience in my life. I grew up with a disability. And as such, I've managed to have a perspective in life that revolves around challenges. And here in Colorado, I worked as a K-12 dean, as a principal of schools in a small rural area at the West Grand School District in Kremlin, Colorado. And while doing that, I found the challenges in rural communities to be very intriguing and very informative, that no matter what one's life experiences are, overcoming challenges is a key part of being successful in life. And because I've had a lifetime of challenges, I absolutely love taking on new ones.
Why Norwood? What made you want to be part of this particular school district?
Well, I have to tell you, it's very similar to Kremlin, Colorado, geographically located between some large ski areas, between Steamboat Springs, Breckenridge, and Winter Park. And so the Norwood community is very similar. And I have to tell you that my experiences with the people in that community are unmatched. In my years, in 25 years of being here in Colorado, I love the people. I love the work ethic. I love the passion for their community. And that's really why Norwood. Norwood's about the community, about growing strong relationships with good people that believe in the unlimited bounds of their children. And that's what I found when I worked in Kremlin, Colorado. And I work in metropolitan Denver right now, but I spent 20 years in rural Colorado and refining those roots. And when the Norwood position came open, I did some research. I have some folks that live in the Telluride area, and I talked to them, and they had nothing but amazing things to say about the Norwood community. And I thought that was a place in which I thought we could really make a difference. And that's why in Norwood.
You talked about the importance and growth you can have through challenges. What do you see some of the challenges the school district has that you would like to tackle?
Well, I certainly would like to work on the facilities. I certainly would like to work on career opportunities for our students. No matter the size of the school district, with technology as it is today and the fact that there is high-speed fiber optics going right down the main street of Norwood, our opportunities are limitless. Our students can get certified in whatever they want to get certified in, and one of the great challenges are making sure that our students in Norwood have every opportunity to succeed in areas in which they're passionate about, from agribusiness to becoming a surgeon. Our students in Norwood can reach those challenges just by getting opportunities that are out and available in the world currently. So I have tremendous relationships with organizations that provide certifications and growth opportunities for students. And with the tight-knit community that's in Norwood, they've managed to create a foundation in the staff, the strong foundation. The school is a school of distinction, which means they've done some great work. So one of the challenges I don't have is to find great people because they're already there. That just means opportunities, creating opportunities, looking at the facilities. Obviously, the Norwood Public Schools have facilities that have been around for a long time, and really looking at growth opportunities within the community, because that's what it's about. A school is the central hub of all things positive in a community, and creating those partnerships with the local community is going to be an essential piece of what we're going to do over the next 5 years.
You are moving to Norwood, moving to the region. What are you looking forward to exploring as you move here?
We could be on this station for hours answering that question, because when you go into the San Miguel County, the opportunities are limitless. To be honest, I look on spending a lot of time out at Miramonte Reservoir and hiking in the mountains. My wife is an avid hiker. The idea right now is for us to be able to have a property out there that has some livestock, and to really kind of take stock in life around me and really enjoying the outdoors. And I have a hand cycle. It's a mountain bike. So I plan on being on mountain bike trails, and I plan on doing some fly fishing in the area. And again, really just taking advantage of, it is breathtaking. When I've been driving through the community, Lone Cone, the Sneffels, LaSalle's, it is a breathtaking area and something that I would appreciate daily.
Todd, thank you again for taking some time to chat with me today, and congratulations on your new position.
Thank you so much.
Superman, Thor, Spider-Man, Black Panther. In 2021, superheroes are plentiful. But there's a new superhuman joining the game. 17-year-old Korra is stepping up as Eco Queen.
Korra is a female, biracial, teenage high school student. There's some backstory on her that she was actually, she's half Ecuadorian, Amazonian Ecuadorian, and her mom is a climate scientist from Australia.
That's Joanna Kanow, Telluride local environmental activist and author of the upcoming young adult novel, Eco Queen.
This takes place in near future, so it had gotten to the point where the whole world has made the only one child rule because resources are so slim and there's not enough food and water for everyone. As she grew up, she realized she had these like electrical powers.
Cora uses those powers to protect people and ecosystems threatened by rising sea levels, catastrophic weather events, droughts, and wildfires across the world.
She goes out and starts using these powers all over the world, like kind of putting out fires. We're putting out, you know, all these major climate events, the sea level rising or oil spills, or she's in the middle of the ocean at one point trying to deal with all this plastic floating around out here.
Kanow says she decided to write the novel after years of looking at the climate crisis and feeling like there wasn't enough being done. In her mind, a superhero is needed.
I guess it all started in learning about this when I was studying in college conservation resource studies 20 years ago, and they're saying, if we don't, you know, use more alternative energy, if we don't stop burning carbon at the rate we're doing now, in 20 years from now, which is now, we're going to have a serious problem. And so I'm like, hey, we've been warned about this for a long time that this is coming, and we didn't do anything. So, you know, in order to make it happen quickly is where a superhero needs to step in.
The book is geared towards young people aged 12 to 15. Kanow notes she hopes to inspire the young people of today to take action.
Knowing that there's something that they can do, plant a tree, use some alternative energy if you can, ride your bike more, compost your food, these things that we know that we needed to do on a bigger scale, but still it's not making a big enough impact. And if I can inspire the kids to lead the way in wanting to make those lifestyle changes or encouraging their parents or their school to take more sustainable steps, then I feel like I can sort of help urge the movement on.
Eco Queen will be released on Earth Day, April 22nd, 2021. The book will be available at Between the Covers bookstore and online. There will also be a book launch event at the Wilkinson Public Library later this spring. Springtime means babies, whether it's a pandemic pup, a quarantine kitten, or the natural cycle for wildlife having babies across the state. While elk calves, deer, and pronghorn fawns are adorable to look at, it's also everyone's responsibility to keep them safe. And that means leaving them alone. This spring, Colorado Parks and Wildlife are urging people who come across baby animals to leave them be. CPW notes, adult animals will often leave their young hidden while they forage for food. In turn, CPW says that leads to an increased number of reports for rescued or abandoned animals. Officials acknowledge the reports come with good intentions, but often result in people kidnapping young and bringing them to CPW offices. Handling or removing a young animal from its habitat will often cause more harm than good. CPW also reminds that feeding wildlife is always illegal. Strengthening Colorado's existing law on speculation in water rights will be a priority at the State House this summer, according to one Western Slope lawmaker. Democratic State Senator Carrie Donovan chairs a committee that vets water legislation. She plans to make out-of-state water investment a priority.
To make sure that water is kept for beneficial use and that it is not put to the use of outside of the state speculators trying to make a quick buck on our impending drought situations.
A state work group was brought together last year to discuss the issue. That group is tasked with making recommendations to lawmakers. So far, they've tried to define what speculation is and what types of transactions are problematic. The group is expected to release its findings in August. Governor Jared Polis has signed two bills into law that aim to save lives by tightening gun regulations. KOTO's Scott Franz has more.
One requires gun owners to report lost or stolen firearms. The other requires weapons to be secured at home so children and suicidal adults cannot get a hold of them. Both were being debated before the mass shooting at a Boulder grocery store in March. Asked Friday if lawmakers should pass any more in response to the attack, Polis said the state should do more to promote its existing red flag law.
How do we do outreach, multilingual, multicultural, to reach people who have a situation where they're a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, they're worried about them, they have a weapon?
The law from 2019 allows police or families to ask a judge to temporarily take away someone's weapon. Lawmakers from Boulder have promised tougher regulations on assault weapons, but it may still be weeks before any legislation is introduced. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
In 1948, a World War II-era bomber crashed into Lake Mead, a massive reservoir formed by the Hoover Dam that straddles the Arizona-Nevada border. After several failed attempts to locate the plane, it was finally discovered in the early 2000s, still remarkably intact. As the lake levels fall, will the draw to see the aircraft finally finish it off? H2O Radio's Franny Halperin has more.
The official crash report was that the pilots were flying low to collect a last bit of scientific data before returning to base, and that the instruments on their B-29 aircraft were improperly calibrated. Also, the account said that Lake Mead, smooth as glass on that July morning in 1948, distorted their depth perception and sent the plane skipping like a stone across the water.
The other side of the story that is told and also was repeated by flight crew is they were hot dogging. They were just, it's fun to fly as low as you can. It just is.
That's Susan Edwards, an archaeologist and historian at the Desert Research Institute, or DRI. Whatever the truth, when the B-29 hit Lake Mead, the impact stripped off three of its four engines and took out part of the tail as one of them whipped past.
The pilot and the co-pilot were able to wrestle the plane back into the air for about another 200 to 300 yards, but with only one engine left and it on fire.
Luckily, they were able to ditch the plane straight and level and pop the hatches to escape. Four of the five, anyway. A crew member in the back, Frank Rico, had been thrown against the bulkhead and broke his arm.
Now, the plane was going down tail first.
He was trying to get out, but his parachute got stuck.
The captain and the co-pilot realized that he had not popped up out of the back, and they heard him banging on the interior of the plane.
And they went back in and were able to pull him free.
So they got into rafts, and the plane went down about 12 minutes later.
The men were rescued, but the B-29 would be lost in a watery catacomb almost 280 feet below the lake's surface. That is until in 2003, when Dave Conlin laid eyes on it.
It really literally looked like a spaceship sitting on the bottom of the lake, and it was clean and shiny, and you could see all the stenciling.
Conlin is the chief of the Submerged Resources Center of the National Park Service, which manages underwater assets from coral reefs to shipwrecks.
The first dive on the plane was, oh my goodness, this is so deep, this is so scary, this is so dark. And then suddenly we saw the aircraft and it was just beautiful.
But actually, he wasn't the first to see it. Several people had tried, without success, to locate the plane, including the pilot who had hired a salvage diver.
And then what happened is that a local diver went out with a side scan sonar and looked for the plane,
which without a permit is against park regulations, but he did find it.
He and a team of beginning technical divers started diving on the plane, and over the course of a year they set up lights and they were filming and they removed items.
Their plan was to do a documentary, file a salvage claim, and sell the aircraft.
And we said, well, wait a minute, it's in a national park and it's a U.S. military aircraft and you found it illegally.
Following a court battle, the Park Service prevailed as the rightful custodian. And now the challenge is to have the public appreciate the B-29 and its history, So what is the history? Why was the plane flying over Lake Mead? Jeff Wedding, Sue's colleague at DRI, gives the backstory that starts with the rise of Nazi Germany.
The powers that be in the military are realizing we may be drawn into a global conflict.
A call goes out from the War Department for a new type of bomber, the B-29 Superfortress, as it came to be known.
It's pushing the boundaries on aviation design. It's going to be twice the size, carry twice the payload, go twice the distance as anything we've got flying, and it'll do it 100 miles an hour faster.
A pair of B-29s, the Enola Gay and the Boxcar, would become famous as the planes that dropped the atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945. But the B-29 sitting at the bottom of Lake Mead had a different mission.
It was designed for photo reconnaissance, to take post-mission bomb damage assessment photographs or to take preliminary photos of a target.
After the war, many B-29s were mothballed, but the Lake Mead plane with its observation windows was perfectly suited to do emerging science on the upper atmosphere. So aboard the plane on that July morning in 1948 was an instrument called the Sun Tracker.
It was a spectrograph that focused on the bandwidths of light.
The mission was to measure infrared rays, research that would lead to the creation of heat-seeking missiles. And although the data were lost in the wreck, the plane offers a glimpse into history because it's intact, even with the co-pilot's headset still dangling on the stick, along with Frank Rico's parachute after they cut him free. Also, the B-29 is sitting in fresh water that preserves it better than had it crashed in the ocean. Or not. Starting in 2007, quagga mussels, a tiny invasive species that harms ecosystems and damages infrastructure, started appearing in the lake.
You still get the sense of the B-29, but it is covered with it, and it is weighing on the fabric and the structural members, the sheer weight of the quaggas.
Park Service divers like Conlon will monitor how the mussels are affecting the plane, and also what happens as the region gets warmer and drier.
So as the lake level drops, the plane becomes easier and easier to access. And so the number of people who have the skill and ability to dive on the plane has increased dramatically.
And that epitomizes a common dilemma for the Park Service.
We all have a mandate and a desire to involve the American people in their national parks. And in the process of doing that, of course, we don't want the thing that we're showing people to be destroyed.
One way to protect the B-29 is to grant it National Historic Landmark status. And an application by the Park Service is under review, with a decision possibly by summer.
Do I wish that it still looked like a spaceship? Absolutely. We are in the forever business. And my job is to leave our parks the way I found them. And if I do my job well, no one will ever know that I ever did my job.
For H2O Radio, I'm Franny Halperin.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for scattered rain and snow showers tonight, with cloudy skies and a low around 15 degrees. Winds could gust as high as 35 miles per hour. Tuesday should be sunny during the day with increasing clouds into the evening and a high in the mid-40s with a low around 25 degrees. Wednesday calls for mostly cloudy skies with a high near 50 degrees and a low near 30. Winds could gust as high as 30 miles per hour. This has been the news for Monday, April 19th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 728-3206. And now, a personal commentary.
True North's fourth annual Teen Summer Jobs Fair kicks off this week. Our first workshop, Job Etiquette and Forms, is this Wednesday, April 21st at 4 p.m. On Friday, April 23rd at 4 p.m., the second workshop, Resume Writing and Review, will take place. And next Wednesday, April 28th at 4 p.m. is the third workshop, Interview Skills and Preparation. Make sure to register in advance to receive the Zoom links. You can register at truenorthyouthprogram.org/jobsfair, or you can text 970-708-1986 to find out more. Thank you to Alpine Bank for sponsoring this great program. Hope to see you on Zoom.
Opinions broadcast over KOTO are those of the speakers. You are also invited to express your views after the news or on Access each weekday at around 4 p.m. If you would like to comment, please contact a staff person here at KOTO. We encourage you to speak out on important public issues.